All right. Good evening, everyone. Let's begin. So first, I want to begin by thanking Mrs. Rosalie Sklar and family for dedicating the shir tonight in commemoration of the yard site of Dr. Manfred Sklar, Menachem Mendel, Ben Zvi Hirsch. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, his neshama will have an aliyah and the family a nechama. Thank you for the sponsorship. Dr. Sklar, Zichron Livracha, played a pivotal role in this shul. Before my coming here, he ran the most important thing in the shul, which is the Kiddush. You know, he who holds the keys to the Kiddush holds the keys to the kingdom. And the Sklar family, the Kaden family, the Bosni families are really pillars of our Kehillah, and it's a great schus tonight to be able to dedicate our learning in the memory of such a beautiful soul. Thank you again for the sponsorship. So let's begin. So tonight, I want to focus on a section. You know, I've come to realize that there are certain parashios where I always talk about the same thing, the same story. Not the same afarshim per se, but the same particular issue. When we come to parashas toldos, we come across what I think for many of us is a very disturbing story, or at least a very, I shouldn't say disturbing, a very intriguing story. And it's intriguing and disturbing for a very obvious reason that we'll see in just a moment. And it seems to begin a pattern that we see over and over the course of Bereishis. Let's take a look at number one. A very simple pasuk. Vayehav Yitzchak es Esav ki tzayid b'thiv, v'rifka oheves es Yaakov. Yitzchak Avinu loved Esav. The literal translation, ki tzayid b'thiv, the translation over here is because his game was in his mouth. We'll discuss what that means. V'rifka oheves es Yaakov. And Rivka Imenu loved Yaakov. What's disturbing, or at least a bit unsettling about this pasuk? The Torah seems to tell us that's what? What's happening in the home of Yitzchak and Rivka? Favorites. Favorites. Each parent has a particular favorite. Yitzchak's favorite is Esav. Rivka's favorite is Yaakov. And so goes the family. Now the truth is, we look at this, and already again we know there must be something deeper over here. Because every single parent knows the most destructive thing you could do for your children is play favorites. Now that being said, it is natural for parents to gravitate to certain children more than others. Inevitably in any mishpacha, so a parent might have a child, multiple children. This child is more like me. This child has my disposition. This child has my traits. On the flip side, this child has my shortcomings. I may be drawn to a child who I see ultimately as the better version as of me, and I be maybe less drawn to the child who I see is a mirror image of me, including all of my falls, my faults, my frailties, and my misdeeds. So the fact that parents are often drawn to one child more than the other, so that's natural. But we know as parents, what's our obligation? To never let on about it. Right? Our job as parents is to be very even-keeled with the way we go ahead and we deal with our children, never chas v'shalom giving any child the impression that they are more loved or less loved than their fellow siblings. And yet, again, we seem to be in the home of Yitzchak and Rivka that there is a very clear split between father and mother. Father aligned with Esav, mother aligned with Yaakov. Now the truth is, you could say, yes, that's what's happening over here. In fact, the Torah tells us the stories of the Avos and Imos. The Torah goes through a lot of different information to tell us one simple thing, which is families aren't perfect. Families aren't perfect. Even patriarchal and matriarchal families aren't perfect. Every family has its dynamics. The truth is, Parshas Toldos is probably the parsha that focuses most on family dynamics because the marriage between Yitzchak and Rivka is perhaps one of the most intriguing relationships. Abram and Sarah are clearly a power couple. Yaakov, Rachel, and Leah, that has its own dynamic, its own difficult dynamic. Yitzchak and Rivka, it's hard to figure out exactly what the nature of their marriage is. For the simple reason that the Torah doesn't tell us all that much about them. And we're going to discuss that in just a little bit. But for whatever reason, no matter how much I try to go on to something else in Parshas Toldos, I'm always brought back to this pasuk. Because for the life of me, I can't understand it. Because remember, these are great people. The Avos and Imos, as much as we say the Torah highlights their faults and their frailties to make them human, they're human. We do not deify our great people. This is a very important idea. You know, in Judaism, there is no concept of infallibility. That's only the Pope, Baruch Hashem, has that, right? The Pope apparently is infallible. We have no Judaic equivalent. The proof to that is, the greatest prophet we ever had was Moshe Rabbeinu. And yet the Torah goes out of its way to tell us that what? He made a mistake. And he made, in the eyes of God at least, a very dramatic mistake. Come on, Ribono Shalom, out of a whole lifetime of service, the poor guy makes one mistake. You're telling me that you couldn't just gloss that over? Really, like we have to do it? And by the way, not only does the Torah speak about it in detail, but God reviews it four times. Four times. One mistake. You ever have a disagreement with your spouse? Like, you do something wrong one time. I'm venting a little bit here. Right? One time. One time. And it's the one time that no one could ever forget. Moshe Rabbeinu makes one mistake. 40 years of leadership. 40 years of selfless, devoted leadership. One mistake. And that one mistake has to be reviewed over. Moshe, brother, you're not going into Eretz Yisrael. Oh, do you remember why? You hit the rock. Moshe, you're not going in. You know why? You hit the rock. Over and over. Why? Why? For a very simple reason. Because the Kadosh Baruch Hu is conveying to us that there is no such thing as infallibility. Human beings are imperfect. We spoke about this morning a little bit in the Perek Shir, about not aiming for perfection, just good. People are not infallible. People make mistakes. And sometimes the greater you are, the greater your mistakes. So you could say that's what's happening over here, that the Torah is telling us that Yitzchak and Rivka were great people. Were they infallible parents? No. The proof, they had favorites. They had favorites. Now, by the way, the favoritism motif plays out much more acutely later on in Bereishis. Who does it play out more acutely with? Yaakov and Yosef. In fact, again, there, Chazal, the rabbis take Yaakov to task. And they say to Yaakov, Bishil Chamish Zuhuvim, because of the extra $5 that Yaakov spent on Yosef's coat beyond the brothers, Niskalgel Hadavar, familial animosity took shape, and our ancestors were consigned to Egyptian servitude. So you understand what's happening over here? The rabbis blame Yaakov's favoritism of Yosef over his brothers for the fact that we became slaves in Egypt. Now that's a bit hyperbolic because it was already foretold to Avram that we were going to become slaves. But the idea that the rabbis are highlighting is don't play favorites. Don't play favorites. The story never ends well. It doesn't end well for the kids. It doesn't end well for the parents. So again, if you need to leave now, so at least you got the pshat. Okay, simple idea. Yitzchak and Rivka are not perfect. Okay, but there's got to be more to the story. There's got to be more to this than simply telling us that our matriarchs and patriarchs are imperfect. So the Mefarshim go all over the place on this. Everyone's scrambling to try to figure out what's happening. Now, the truth is, interestingly enough, what most of the Mefarshim, most of the commentaries get hung up on is not as much the favoritism piece, but a little bit more as to Yitzchak loving Esav. This idea that Yitzchak, who was the patriarch, Yitzchak himself, who out of all of the Avos is considered to be among the most sacred, somehow is drawn to Esav, who did not follow in his ways, who did not embody his ideas or his ideals, and yet Rivka is drawn to Yaakov. So take a look at number four, skipping a little bit. I put on the sheet Rashi and the Medrash. You know, Rashi brings down the famous idea that essentially Esav fooled his father. Yitzchak was older already, and he was already blind. And as such, he was really not aware of a lot of things that were going on around him. So Esav was literally able to pull the wool over his eyes, and was able to portray himself as a righteous person in the eyes of his father, when in fact he was not. The Medrash says that because Yitzchak was blind, was more feeble already, was older, he had to rely on Esav for sustenance. Mm-hmm. Esav Esav was his meal ticket, and because he needed Esav for food, therefore by definition he allowed himself to overlook certain things. Rav Hirsch in number 4 says something amazing, and this to me goes back to what we started with. A second factor which could only have a pernicious effect was the difference of feelings of parents towards the children, unity and complete agreement of parents in the education, and the same feelings and love to all their children, even to those who are not so good. Yeah, just those require most of all, even more than those who are physically weak or ill, loving care and consideration and sacrifice. That is the first fundamental condition and cornerstone of every education. So first of all, Rav Hirsch, by the way, just said something amazing. Nothing to do with Yitzchak and Rivka, but an incredible idea about parenting. Parents have to be on the same page in terms of how you want to raise your child, in terms of the dreams and aspirations. Remember, again, at a certain, while your children are young, you could have dreams and aspirations for them. At a certain point in time, they stop caring what your dreams and aspirations for them are, and they have their own, and that's okay. That's okay. But parents have to be on the same page, or at least they have to figure out a way to get on the same page. Sometimes, again, there's a divide. Sometimes you can't be exactly on the same page, but at least, as we say, klape chutz, externally, as far as my children are concerned, children can never see a divided parental stance. Because the moment that there's a divided parental stance, that children have a unique ability to exploit chaos. They have the ability to go ahead and find the weakness in the parental armor and exploit that. So parents never want to go, same way that parents shouldn't argue in front of children, even not arguing, but even just being divided on certain issues. And if parents have differences of opinion, those differences of opinion need to be worked out of sight of the child, so that parents could go ahead and present a united front. Now, of course, Rav Hirsch is saying all of this in the context of what? On the context of Yitzchak and Rivka, who appear not to have a united front in terms of the parenting of their children. That Isaac's sympathies, this is amazing, were more inclined towards Esav, Rebekah's to Jacob, can moreover be easily explained by the attraction of opposites. Listen to this. We see Yitzchak risen up again from death on the altar, preferring to withdraw from the bustle of the world and to live quietly in the proximity of the desert, living at the well of Be'er Lachai Ro'i, away from the busy traffic of men. Now remember, Yitzchak was very different than his father. Avram Avinu was out. Avram Avinu was a man of the people. Avram Avinu was the ambassador of God, spreading the word of monotheism to whoever would listen. Yitzchak was, I'm not going to say withdrawn, but Yitzchak Avinu was much more to himself. Yitzchak Avinu, again, was much more by himself. Yitzchak did not want to live in the centers. Remember again, we spoke about when Avram first gets to Canaan, and there's regional famine. Where does he go to? Remember again? Egypt. Why does he go to Egypt? Rav Soloveitchik explains so beautifully, he went to Egypt because he was chalashing to get to Egypt. Why? Because Egypt was the epicenter of human development during that time. He wanted more than anything to be able to spread the word of God to those who he knew did not yet believe. That was Avraham Avinu. Yitzchak was not like his father at all. Yitzchak Avinu was more withdrawn. I don't mean withdrawn like in a negative way. He was just more to himself. He wasn't a man of the people. So if Hirsch goes ahead and says something amazing, he says that Esav's lusty, active nature appealed to him, and that he perhaps saw in him a force which he had lost, could be a support to the home, would be quite possible. So first, there's something amazing. Yitzchak is drawn to Esav. Do you know why? Because Esav represented everything that Yitzchak was not. Esav was the outdoorsman. Right? Esav was the man. Esav, what was Yitzchak? Yitzchak Avinu was already going blind at a relatively young age. He was confined very much to the home. He was not able to provide for the family. Esav had to do that. So Yitzchak Avinu sees in Esav something that is lacking in him, something that he does not possess. And so he's drawn to that child. Rivka, listen to this. Rebecca, on the other hand, saw in Jacob's whole being a picture of a life unfolding in which in her father's house she had never had the remotest idea. This, so Rivka, on the other hand, Rivka grew up with Esavs, right? Rivka had Esavs in her family. Rivka had Esavs in her classes. Rivka was surrounded by a culture of Esavs. What did Rivka want? Rivka wanted a life of holiness. Rivka wanted a life of spirituality. So who is she drawn to? She's drawn to her younger son Yaakov. How does the Torah describe Yaakov? He's an Ishtam Yoshev Oalim. A simple man, a simple young man, dwelling in tents. Which tents? Tents of spirituality. So if Hirsch really advances over here, something amazing. He goes on, the sympathies are explainable. So remember again, so according to Rav Hirsch, I understand why Yitzchak is drawn to Esav, and I understand why Rivka is drawn to Yaakov. But what's the message? So Rav Hirsch says the message is, but parents should not allow such hidden feelings to influence them in making any difference in their love towards their children. So this is amazing. According to Rav Hirsch, he understands that the Torah is telling us this story of Yitzchak and Rivka to tell us what not to do in parenting. Yitzchak and Rivka made a parenting mistake. What was the parenting mistake? Apparently, they were public in their favoritism. Yeah, but again, the favoritism is understandable. People are drawn to opposites. Again, remember, a lot of times, and this often manifests itself in unhealthy ways, parents live through their children. Do you know if Hirsch brings down in a different context, why do people have children? Why do people have children? Because at the end of the day, deep down, what we want more than anything is immortality. That's really what I want. But immortality is not in the stars. So if I can't have immortality, what's the next best thing? A child. So why? Because at least what it does is it gives me more time. My child is an extension of me. So when I'm gone, there's going to be a piece of me that lives on after me. Now, sometimes that manifests itself in unhealthy ways. A lot of times you see parents who try to live through their children. You see sometimes interesting thing about parents pressuring children to accomplish certain things in certain ways. And when you peel back the layers, you begin to see that what? Those parents very often suffered certain failures in life and are trying to correct those failures through their children. Very dangerous and inappropriate parenting, but it happens nevertheless. Rav Hirsch explains over here that Yitzchak is drawn to Esav, that Rivka is drawn to Yaakov is understandable, but not good. But not good. Now I want to tell you, for the sake of full disclosure, Rav Hirsch says some pretty dramatic and controversial stuff in this week's Parsha. A number of controversial ideas that really seem to indicate that a lot of the stories that are shared with us in this week's Parsha are to really highlight some of the pitfalls in parenting and some of the pitfalls in marriage. They're very controversial because anytime you try to deconstruct the avos and imos, you have to tread very lightly. You have to tread very lightly. We're not talking about regular people. It's true, we're talking about human beings, but not necessarily people just like us. So we always have to be careful. There's that very fine line. But again, it's Rav Hirsch. I'm not saying it. If I was saying it, you could jump on me. But Rav Hirsch is saying it. And Rav Hirsch is saying the take-home message is don't play favorites. Don't play favorites because it doesn't work. Why doesn't it work? Remember, how does the story end with Yaakov and Esav? How does the story end in, let's play this out. So Rivka has her favorite Yaakov, she's drawn to him. Yitzchak has his favorite Esav, he's drawn to him. How does the story end? The story ends with a fractured family. The story ends that Yaakov is sent away from home, right? Esav goes away from home. Who's at Rivka Imenu's Levaya? Neither of her children. Esav will not go to his mother's funeral because he forever despises her for what he feels she did to him, ultimately by robbing him of his birthright. Yaakov is in exile. Yaakov hears about the fact that his mother dies, that she already died, when he comes back to Eretz Yisrael. Remember, again, fast-forwarding a little bit, the Torah records a fascinating episode, a piece of information, that Yaakov Avinu crosses back into Eretz Yisrael, into Eretz Canaan, and he hears that Devora, Meinekes Rivka, passed away. Devora, his mother's wet nurse.
Yes.
Okay, Baruch Tanana, sorry to hear that. Right? You'll excuse me, who cares? So Chazal understand that it's a cryptic message that Rivka passed away. The Torah obscures Rivka's death because the Ramban brings down, she had a very non bakavadik levaya. Why non bakavadik levaya? Yitzchak is blind and old and can't go. Esav will not attend. Yaakov is in exile. No one is at Rivka Imenu's levaya. Do you want to know, says Rav Hirsch, what happens when you play favorites? You tear apart your mishpacha. Everyone is destroyed. The favorite child is destroyed. The unfavorite child is destroyed. The parents are destroyed. The familial fabric unravels. It never works. Therefore, says Rav Hirsch, parents have to be on the same take-home messages. Parents have to be on the same page with the parenting of their children. Parents have to be on the same page with the messaging towards their children. Parents have to be on the same page with the hashkafa that they espouse to their children. But most of all, parents have to be on the same page with the way they treat their children. There cannot be favoritism. And by the way, favoritism sometimes comes along in very nuanced ways. Mm-hmm. How many times does a parent say, you know, why can't you be more like your sister? Why can't she be more like your sister? She always behaved so nicely. She always did so well on her tests. She always did. And again, a parent is just trying to give chizuk, right? He's just trying to say, I believe in you. I believe in you. And all the child hears is, my mother loves my sister more. What our children pick up, the truth is, the cloud gadol in life is that people want to be loved, recognized, and appreciated. And the younger you are, the more you need that. All a child needs to know to be successful, all a child needs to know to be a successful parent is that they're loved, they're appreciated for who they are and what they are, and your love for them is never being measured against a love for someone else. And says Rav Hirsch, unfortunately, we see from this story that for whatever the reason, Yitzchak and Rivka were not able to get this arranged in their home. And unfortunately, again, the fallout is quite catastrophic. But I'd like to focus a little bit differently. And what I'd like to try to understand this story is a little bit more through the lens of Esav. Meaning, or I should say, the lens of Yitzchak and Esav. Because the fact that Rivka is drawn to Yaakov, look, Yaakov is the kid who's doing what's right. Yaakov is the kid who's continuing on the Abrahamic path of monotheism, of spiritual worship. What's fascinating is this relationship between Yitzchak and Esav. So again, probably most of us are familiar with the approach of Rashi, that why is Yitzchak so enamored by Esav? Why? Because Esav fooled him. Esav fooled him. Either it's a utilitarian relationship that Yitzchak needs Esav because Esav hunts, brings food. But Rashi understands, no, Esav fooled him. Yitzchak Avinu doesn't have all of his faculties. He's blind. He can't see necessarily things for what they are. And as such, again, Esav literally pulls the wool over his eyes. But I always thought that you have to give Yitzchak Avinu more credit than that. That Yitzchak Avinu, like every parent, deep down, understands the nature of their child. So how do we understand this relationship between Yitzchak and Esav? So I want to share with you something amazing. If you notice again, we have three avos: Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And one stands out, which is Yitzchak. We know a lot about Avraham. We know a lot about Yaakov. But we know virtually nothing about Yitzchak. It's true we're introduced to Yitzchak as a young boy through his birth, the story of Akedas Yitzchak. But what did he do? What did he accomplish? If you think about it, Avram, Lech Lecha, Mitzrayim, Grar, Avimelech, the war against the four kings and the five kings, purchase of Hebron, Ma'asa Machpelah, Akedas Yitzchak, so much. Yaakov? The truth is, Yaakov is the father of 12 Shvatim. We see the family dynamics. Rivka and Rachel, Bila and Zilpa, going down to Yosef, up to Yitzchak. What do we know about Yitzchak? So I'll tell you something amazing. Everything you want to know about Yitzchak Avinu is contained in number 5. Here it is. What do you know about Yitzchak? Vayelech misham Yitzchak, vayichan benachal grar vayishev sham. Yitzchak Avinu leaves Grar, because Avimelech no longer wants to host him in Grar, and he goes ahead and he encamps in the valley of Grar. Vayoshav Yitzchak vayachpores be'eros hamayim asher chavru b'mei Avram, avi vaysatmum plishtim achrei mos Avram, vaykro lahem shemos kashemos asher karo lahem aviv. So what happens? Yitzchak Avinu digs wells First, what does he do? He unearths the wells of his father. Avraham Avinu dug wells. They were filled back in by the Plishtim, by the Philistines. Yitzchak Avinu excavates them again. So, Vayachpru ad the Yitzchak. So again, if you skip, Vayachpru ad the Yitzchak banachal, Vayimtsu sham ber maim chayim. So what happens? Then Yitzchak digs some more wells. They get into fight about the wells. Pasach Havala, verse 21. Vayachpru acheres. They dug another well. 22. Fine. Do you know what we know about Yitzchak Avinu in the Torah? One simple piece of information. That's what? He dug wells. Okay? That, by the way, is the bulk of information we have about Yitzchak Avinu. That he was a well digger. We know about the Akedah. We know about, again, the episode with the Bechorah, with the birthright. Although, again, there Yitzchak Avinu is much more like a support character, not the primary character. And he dug wells. And the Torah goes out of its way to tell us every single piece of information about every single well dug by Yitzchak Avinu. And the obvious question is why the information is relevant. So if you take a look at number 6, I want to share with you an incredible idea by the Lubavitcher Rebbe. Lubavitcher Rebbe explains so beautifully. He says, I forgot to number the paragraphs, but I'll tell you where we are. From the beginning, the left-hand, right-hand paragraph, the top. Avodasol she Yitzchok, shezeu klalos inyan ha'avoda milamata lamala, hispata vechapiros be'eros. He says, she'inyana, hi'asoras ha'elim v'hester. So the Rebbe says something amazing. He says the entire essence of Yitzchak can be understood through the process or through his preoccupation with digging wells. Yitzchak Avinu was the well guy. He was the well digger. And his entire essence, his gestalt, was encapsulated in this concept of digging wells. What's so special about digging wells? Skip to the second paragraph. V'zeu inyan mas avosim labanim. Shavadaso shel Yitzchak b'chafiros habeiros. So I'm going to read the words of the Rebbe, then we'll explain it. So the Rebbe says, a person should never say that I cannot access my inner light. Each of us has incredible inner light. Each of us has incredible wellspring of holiness. But sometimes I say to myself, I know that it's there, but it's covered by too many layers of impurity. It's covered by too many layers of schmutz. There's too many layers of earth on top of it. And there's no possible way I can access it. Lubavitcher Rebbe says a person should never make such a statement. Because a person should never say, you know what? I have so many animalistic, carnal layers on top of my soul that it's impossible for me to access my spiritual light. Why can't I say that? Listen to this. Ki Yitzchak Pasach v'saval kvares ha'avoda shel hasaras ha'helem v'hester ayideh ha'chafiros ha'beiros. So the Rebbe says something amazing. What is the science of well digging? Well digging 101. What do you do?
Take a shovel.
Step one, excellent. Number two?
Put it in the ground.
Excellent. Number three? Start shoveling away dirt. And when do you stop?
When you hit the water.
Says the Lubavitcher Rebbe, what an incredible metaphor for personal growth. Each of us has that wellspring of beautiful water, beautiful spirituality, beautiful holiness inside of each of us. But what happens? Sometimes it becomes difficult to see. Sometimes it becomes difficult to perceive. Sometimes I forget that it's even there. Why? Because, you'll excuse me, there are so many layers of dirt. There's so much earth piled on top of my precious soul, piled on top of my natural spring of spirituality, that I even forget that it's there. So the avoda in life, says the Rebbe, is to go ahead and what? To go ahead and start shoveling away the dirt. And sometimes the water is relatively close to the surface. All it requires is a few shovelfuls of dirt and you've hit the spring. Other times you have to keep shoveling and shoveling and shoveling. And sometimes when you shovel, the dirt resists movement. Sometimes you begin shoveling and the dirt says, hey,
I've been here for a long time. I'm not interested in going anywhere. And the earth solidifies and the earth hardens. And it's not soft sand dearth, but it becomes hard clusters of rock. And you have to chop through it and you have to dig through it. But here's what we know. That if you keep digging, ultimately, one thing is certain, which is you will strike water. Says the Lubavitcher Rebbe, this was the entire essence of Yitzchak's life. Ki Yitzchak pasach v'salal kivaras ha'avodah shel hasaras ha'elem v'hester ayidei chafiras ha'beiros. Yitzchak spent his life digging wells. And we're going to see, not just literally, but spiritually and metaphorically as well. Yitzchak was the one who taught us that if you're committed to the process of digging, if number one, you believe that there's water there, and you're willing to dig and dig and dig, and move away the layers of impurity, you will find something beautiful. Skip to the left-hand paragraph. He says, look at the second paragraph on the left-hand side. Kishem sheYitzchak shalach es avada lachbar be'eros. The same way Yitzchak sent his servants to go out and dig wells. Kach tzarech kol echad ve'echad miYisrael lishlach es avadav. We have to send our servants to dig wells as well. But who are our servants? Kochos nafsho, koach shel mesiras nefesh, v'kabalas ol. Our servants represent our abilities, our faculties, our kochos. To use our life kochos to be able to move away the dirt and find the water. Hakoach the hasri al yodem es kal lamos. Ukeshem sheitzel Yitzchak hayetchila ma'amad umatzav shel meriva. So again, the Lubavitcher Rebbe says something absolutely amazing. Do you want to know why the Torah spends so much time on Yitzchak digging wells? It's not because of the well's importance. It's because of the metaphorical importance. Yitzchak Avinu is the one who teaches us that sometimes our inner holiness becomes obscured by layers of dirt. You know, sometimes we make bad decisions in life. Some of us, often we make bad decisions in life. And every time I make bad decisions, I throw another layer of dirt on top of my well. And sometimes to the point that I forgot that there was ever even a well there. But the amazing part is if you find the courage to dig, you will always find water. Who teaches us? Yitzchak. And if you look at Yitzchak's life, something amazing happens. Yitzchak Avinu dug different kinds of wells, right? What's the first set of wells that he dug? First set? His father's wells. Because you know what happens sometimes? Our parents try to teach us a variety of different lessons. But you know what happens when your parents try to teach you something? Come on. Come on. Right? Who are you? Who really? I mean, I love you. You're wonderful. You're great. But really, who are you? Right? I got this. I got this down. Right? I'm 10 years old already. I know life. Right? I don't need any more guidance. And the older we get, so the smarter we think we become. And so our parents try to give us the well. And what do we often do with that well? We just throw dirt on it. No thank you, no thank you, no thank you. Until something amazing happens. Which is you reach an age, and it's different ages for different people, where you realize that what? My parents actually knew what they were talking about. My parents listen to this shir, so I'm hoping that they hear that. My parents actually know, they know what they were talking about. And had I only listened to them earlier on in life, I could have saved myself from so many of the mistakes that they warned me against, but that I ignored. So what do I do? The first step in life is what do? You go back to the wells of your parents. Those same wells that when they tried to give it to you, here, drink from these waters. I said, feh. I don't need those waters. I got my own waters. In fact, I don't even like those wells at all. And I covered them back with dirt. And now I reach a certain age, and what do? I go back and I uncover those parental wells. Because I recognize, wow, there was a lot of wisdom that my parents tried to convey to me and confer upon me that I was resistant to. I need to go back and find it. And after I uncover my parents' wells, then what? I figure out, what are my wells? Where are my strengths? Where are my abilities? What do I bring to the table of mankind and to the table of the universe? Because each of us are here for a purpose. Each of us has a tachlis. HaKadosh Baruch Hu endowed each of us with some unique ability or skill set to make a difference in this world. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave each of us a well. But sometimes we get so busy with other stuff in life that we forget to access our own sweet waters of spirituality. And so because of years and years of neglecting my well, it becomes covered with dirt. And so I have to engage in the incredible process of uncovering my well, moving aside the dirt. And you know, moving the dirt off your well is exceptionally difficult, because you know, sometimes what that means is not only have I filled in my well with dirt, but you know, I might have even built like a nice little cottage on top of it, and there's a deck and there's a pool and it's beautiful. And if I want to uncover my well, you know what I have to do? I have to deconstruct a lot of the things that I've built in life. You know, the most difficult part of change is not changing our behaviors. The most difficult part of change is sometimes deconstructing the very things that you built, because you recognize now that they were the wrong structures. They weren't the right things to build. It was flawed building. It was flawed architecture. I didn't build the right things. And the things that I built are occupying prime real estate. They're sitting on top of the well. And I cannot access the well unless I knock down the inappropriate structures of life. Only once I raise the structures can I even begin to dig. This was Yitzchak Avinu's life. He dug for his father's wells, and after he uncovered that wisdom, he looked for his own wells. And even Yitzchak Avinu's wells apparently got covered by dirt. But this becomes the metaphor for the life of the Jew. Finding the wells of our parents, finding our own wells of holiness and spirituality, and finding the courage sometimes to deconstruct the things that we have built. Sometimes life, you have to do a 180. Sometimes you have to turn yourself around. Sometimes you have to go ahead and recognize, I was wrong. I mean, you shouldn't recognize that I was wrong. I'll recognize that I was wrong. You take care of you. I recognize that I was wrong. And you know what? Sometimes I'm 30, I'm 40, I'm 50, I'm 20, I'm 80. And I say to myself, you know what? I built the wrong stuff. And in that moment, I have to find the courage to knock down the structure, take out my shovel, and once again try to find my well. But lest you think that it's impossible, what's the only thing the Torah tells us about Yitzchak Avinu? He's a well digger. Some people spend their whole lives, and sometimes the greatest accomplishment of a person is that I found my well. It was covered with dirt. I dug it out, and I found the beautiful, crystal, refreshing waters. And if you take a look at number 7, now we begin to understand Yitzchak Avinu and Esav. Rav Lev Yitzchak of Berdichev says something so beautiful. He says, Vayehav Yitzchak es Esav kitzayid befiv. So remember again, the Pasuk said that Yitzchak Avinu loved Esav because literally kitzayid befiv, which we translated as he placed game in his mouth. Game means hunted food. He placed meat. Esav fed Yitzchak, so Yitzchak loved Esav. Writes the Rebbe so beautifully. Pirish, kitzadik, hatanug shelo, me'alias nitzotzos, shema'ale hanitzotzos asher nitzotu beklipos. The tzadik has an acute sensitivity to holiness. And whereas the rest of us may not be able to perceive holiness in a particular place, the tzaddik, the righteous person, is able to perceive that there is holiness anywhere and everywhere. And the tzaddik's greatest pleasure in life is uncovering the obscured holiness. He says, "Batorah betfila v'zeu ki tzayid befiv shabefiv shlo motzi netzotzos v'zeu vayehav Yitzchak es Esav." Ki b'shoresh Esav hayu nitzotzos asher nitzodu sham. Listen to what Rabbi Yitzchak says. Do you know why Yitzchak loved Esav? Do you know why? You see, Rabbi Yitzchak says, no, I don't buy that Yitzchak was fooled. I don't buy it. He's Yitzchak Avinu, he's a smart man. I don't buy it. I don't believe he was fooled by Esav at all. Yitzchak knew who his son was. He knew what his son was. He knew what his son was. And I say, how can you love an Esav? Vayehav Yitzchak es Esav. Why? Kitzayit. Kitzayit means something that is trapped. Yitzchak saw the trapped holiness in Esav. You see, the world wrote off Esav. The world said, Esav is already off the derech. Esav's already gone. Esav's an isvarf. He's a nothing. Forget about him. Cut your losses. Baruch Hashem, you have a Yaakov. And Yitzchak Avinu says, what are you talking about? I am the well digger. I'm the well digger. I am the guy who, when you look at a piece of earth, doesn't see dirt, but sees the beautiful waters that are contained beneath. I am the guy who has spent my life digging for the subterranean refreshing waters, recognizing that there is beautiful holiness sometimes trapped underneath layers and layers of very unappealing dirt. Yitzchak Avinu says, if I could see that, if I could see that in the earth, you think I can't see that in my own son? Vayehav Yitzchak es Esav. Yitzchak loved Esav. Why? Kitzayit. Kitzayit. Kitzayit means because he saw that there was holiness trapped in his son. He saw the holiness was there. He saw that Esav was a well. Esav was a living, breathing well that was covered by meters and meters of dirt. Sorry, to all use meters. Right? Covered by meters and meters of dirt. And that's what he saw. And if I could just dig through it, if I could just dig through it, I'll find the beauty. How does Yitzchak dig through it? Befiv. Yitzchak Avinu doesn't sit and learn Torah with his son. Yitzchak Avinu doesn't go ahead and say, "Nu, tell me Avart, what did you learn in Cheder today?" Right? He doesn't say that. What does he say? "How are you? How was your day? I love you. You're special. I care about you. You know, you're my favorite Esav. You're my favorite little Esav," right? Kitzayit Befiv. Yitzchak Avinu felt, if he just knows that I love him, if I could just express my love to him and make him feel valued where he is holding now, not make him feel valued if he behaves like this, not make him feel valued if he lives like this, but make him feel valued where he is, I'm confident that the holiness will come out. Yitzchak Avinu was the well digger. And the well digger always knows that no matter how packed the earth may be, there is beautiful, refreshing water beneath the surface. And so a Yitzchak could even love an Esav. A Yitzchak could even love an Esav. But let's take it one step further. Because the truth is, I want to show you something absolutely amazing. I know it's been amazing up until now, right? But now it's going to be even more amazing. Look at number 8. I'm going to take you back to last week's parasha for just a moment. Because here you're going to see another dynamic of the story that is mind-blowing. So here, remember again, go back to the end of Chayi Sara. The Yitzchak bo, mi bo be'er lachai ro'i, v'hu yoshei be'eretz ha'negev. So Yitzchak Avinu, the Rashbam points out over here, that Yitzchak Avinu is living in the Negev, living in the south of Eretz Yisrael, in a place called Be'er Lachai Ro'i. That's the name of the place, Be'er Lachai Ro'i, the well of the all-seeing God. Okay, what happens then? Vayetze Yitzchak lasuach basada lifnos arev. Yitzchak Avinu goes out to Davin, and what happens? Remember, this is when Eliezer is coming back with Rivka. Vayisa enough, he lifts his eyes. Vayar bineg malim bayim. He lifts his eyes and he sees that Eliezer is coming with the camels. Rivka is coming back. Okay, so what's happening over here? So what's interesting as follows is, why does the Torah need to tell me that Yitzchak Avinu is in Be'er Lachai Ro'i? Okay, I mean, like, it's an interesting fact, but remember, again, the Torah is not a storybook. So whenever you find a piece of information, you have to ask yourself, why is it there? So remember again, Be'er Lachai Ro'i sounds familiar, right? Where did we hear about Be'er Lachai Ro'i earlier? Take a look at number 10. When Hagar is expelled from the home of Avraham Avinu, and she's told by the Malach that you're pregnant. She's told by the Malach that you are pregnant. You're pregnant with Avram's child, and you're going to have a son. You're going to name him Yishmael. Where did this take place? Look at number 10, Pasuk Yudal, verse 14, writes the Torah, Akin kara lebe'er, be'er lachai ro'i. So Hagar named this place Be'er Lachai Ro'i. So Hagar named it. Amazingly enough. So just, you see something amazing unfolding over here. Hagar named the place where she had the nevuah, the prophecy with the Malach, telling her that she's pregnant, she's going to have a child, Be'er Lachai Ro'i. Where is Yitzchak davening mincha? Where is he davening mincha? Be'er Lachai Ro'i. Now watch, it gets better. Take a look at number 11. So the pasuk says, Lasuach basode. Yitzchak Avinu goes out. Lasuach basode. So we translate Lasuach to mean converse in the field. We assume, the Gemara says, what was Yitzchak Avinu doing in the field? What was he doing? He was praying, he was davening. Look at the Radak says in number 11. Lasuach, kilomar, letayel bein hasichim. He was walking around between the thorn bushes. Okay, so we're going to put this all together in just a moment. Yitzchak Avinu is where? Where is he? Be'er Lachai Ro'i. Who gave Be'er Lachai Ro'i its name? Hagar, when she was expelled from the home of Avram Avinu. Yitzchak Avinu was walking around, where? By the thorn bushes. Look at number 12. Hagar is kicked out a second time from the Abrahamic home. This is after Yishmael is born, and Sarah Imenu says to Avram, I cannot raise a Yitzchak in the same home as a Yishmael. As the same home as a Yishmael. So what happens? So Hagar is kicked out, Vayich with Yishmael, Vayichlu Hamayim min Hachemes, they run out of water. Hagar and Yishmael run out of water. What happens? What does Hagar do? She puts Yishmael by the thorn bushes. The thorn bushes where? Again, in Be'er Lachai Ro'i. So you see what's happening over here? Yitzchak Avinu that afternoon is walking by the same thorn bushes that his half-brother laid, half-dying. His half-brother laid dying just a few years earlier. Just a few years before, his half-brother Yishmael was almost dead right by these same thorn bushes. And Be'er Lachai Ro'i. And what happens? Take a look at number 13. Actually, take a look at number 14. The Medrash writes, Vayetze Yitzchok Michevron Lasuach Basad Lifnos Arev. Yitzchok Avinu goes out to the field, the Hispalel. He goes out to the field to daven. What is Yitzchok Avinu davening for? Shehayomoro Tamid Apanov Shelo Yinasehu. So the Medrash says something amazing. That Yitzchak Avinu davened to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that he should not be tested. He should not be tested. I shouldn't be tested. Life is full of tests. You can't daven to God not to be tested. That's the nature of life. So what does it mean he's davening to God not to be tested? So perhaps what's unfolding over here is as follows. Yitzchak Avinu understands that Eliezer went to get him a wife. Right? Went to get him a wife. And Eliezer is going to come back soon. Yitzchak Avinu goes out to daven. And where does he daven? He davens in Be'er Lachai Ro'i. But not just in Be'er Lachai, but where? But where? By the thorn bushes. Which thorn bushes? The very same thorn bushes that his half-brother Yishmael lay dying by just a few years earlier. And he davens. And what does he daven? Ribono Shel Olam, please do not test me like my father. In other words, do not test me like you tested my father. What was he referring to? Avraham Avinu has the ultimate test. What was the test? He had to choose. No. See, everyone thinks it was the Akedah. You know what Avraham Avinu's, I think, most difficult test was? He has to choose Yitzchak over Yishmael. Avraham Avinu has the heartbreaking task of choosing one child and exiling another child. And do you know who sees all of this happen right in front of his eyes? Yitzchak. Yitzchak Avinu. What do you think happened in Avram Avinu's house that night after Avram had to exile his wife and his son? Hagar and Ishmael, what do you think? You think they sat down for dinner and played bingo? You think what? They just sat by the fireplace and roasted marshmallows? You don't think Avram Avinu cried himself to sleep that night? You don't think he cried himself to sleep every subsequent night because he had to exile his beloved son from his home? It was the right thing to do, not just because Sarah said it, but God weighed in on this as well. But do you think that the heart of a parent is ever repaired when they know that they have to kick a child out of the house to exile? Yitzchak Avinu saw this. And he probably saw that his father was never the same afterwards. And he probably saw that his father was never a moment away from just breaking down in tears, thinking about what's happening with my Yishmael? Where is Yishmael? You know, we often think Avram is Yitzchak. Yishmael was his son. Remember again, let's go back for just a moment. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Avram Avinu that you're going to have a son with Sarah. You remember again what Avram Avinu's response was? What was his response? He says, Lu Yishmael Yichya Lefanecha. He says, what a strange, if only Yishmael would live before you. And the Mefarshim point out, Avram Avinu was saying to God, God, thank you, but I have a counter offer. You don't need to make miracles about bringing about children between 100-year-old men and 90-year-old women. I have a son. Can we just work with what we've got? But what he didn't understand is that his future was never to come from Hagar. His future had to come from Sarah. But he was heartbroken over it. And Yitzchak Avinu grows up in a home where he saw a divided family. And so what happens? In that moment, Yitzchak Avinu davens. Because remember again, immediately after that is when Yitzchak and Rivka get married. They get married. So what's Yitzchak Avinu's tefillah right before he gets married? Right? What was in Yitzchak Avinu's aneni? You know, what was he davening for right before the chasana? he was davening for Yiratzon, that my home should not be like my father's. My home should be like my father's in many, many, many ways. But I have to have a home where all of my children have a place. I have to have a home where no one's outside of the fold. I have to have a home where all of my children are appreciated for who they are, for what they are, and are loved unconditionally. That's the tefillah of Yitzchak. So now we come back. Are the parents playing favorites? Are the parents playing favorites? I don't think so. And I'll tell you why. If you take a look at number 17, the end of this week's parasha, the Torah says something amazing. Vayishlach Yitzchak es Yaakov vayelech padena aram. This is when Yitzchak and Rivka decide that Yaakov has to leave to find the shidduch. That's the pretext, right? To go find the shidduch. So they send him away. Lavan ben Besuel ha'arami. He goes. Yaakov goes to the home of his uncle Lavan, Achi Rivka, Aim Yaakov ve'Esav. And who was Lavan? He was the brother of Rivka. And who was Rivka? The mother of Yaakov and Esav. What's the obvious question? Why do you have to tell me this? Remember, this is the end of Parshas Toldos. We already learned about Rivka Imenu's pregnancy, her birth. We know that she is the mother of Yaakov and Esav. And in fact, if you look at Rashi number 18, Rashi says something amazing. Eim Yaakov Esav, eini yodea mamalam denu. Rashi says, I have absolutely no idea what this is teaching us. I'm going to tell you what it's teaching us. What it's teaching us is the Ribbono Shel Olam is telling us, do not think for a second that Rivka didn't love Esav. Of course Rivka loved Esav. It was her Bechor. It was her firstborn son. Of course she loved him. The Torah calls her the mother of Yaakov and Esav. But Rivka understood what was happening inside of the home. You see, Yitzchak Avinu, the well digger, understood that he had a child at risk. Understood that he had an Esav who was one step away from being lost to the family forever. So what does he do? He goes out of his way to overcompensate for Esav. He goes out of his way to shower additional love upon Esav. And by the way, not because he had to, because he believed in his son. Because he believed ultimately again that underneath all the layers of dirt, there was water. Because he believed that there was holiness that was trapped. And so Yitzchak Avinu says, my avoda is I have to uncover the well of Esav. Well, Rivka, a mother is always in tune with what's happening. Let me see, fathers often have tunnel vision, right? We have to do something. Okay, that's it. We often don't think about the rest of the stuff. Mothers have a panoramic view. So Rivka says, great, Yitzchak, I'm totally behind you. There's only one problem, which is, we have another child also, right? There's a Yaakov. So I get it what you're doing with Esav, and I'm behind you, and I believe in it as well. But if you're going to devote your attentions to uncovering the well of Esav, then I'll have to make sure just to be the mother and the father for Yaakov. This is not a story of favorites. It's just the opposite. It's a story of synergistic parenting. It's a story of a couple who are working in such incredible parental synchronicity together at the same time, right? The synchronized parenting. They are working together. Yitzchak Avinu says, Rivka, you see our Esav. You see Esav, you know, I just want to point out, Esav, because we know what Esav becomes, so we have like this image that mamish that like, he's in diapers running around killing people, right? And mamish like, he's just like a horrible Russia from the beginning. I guarantee you, Esav was a beautiful little boy. And I'm sure he gave his parents incredible nachas. And I'm sure he got into a lot of mischief. And I'm sure he did some great things and he did some bad things. But his parents catch on pretty quickly that this is an at-risk kid. That this kid, already at a young age, has obscured his well with layers upon layers of dirt. And so they make a conscious decision. Yitzchak says to Rivka, I got this. Let me handle this one. Because I am the well digger. Because I am the one who's able to see the trapped holiness, no matter how many layers obscure it. And Rivka says, okay, you have Esav, I'll take Yaakov. An incredible picture of a couple working together to raise dramatically different children. Each parent giving each child what they needed in order to thrive. Was Yitzchak Avinu successful? Was Yitzchak successful?
No.
Yes. And I'm going to tell you why. Do you remember what happens in the aftermath of the, we didn't touch on the Bechorah story, the birthright story, but do you remember what happens after Esav hears that Yaakov took the brachos? Remember what happens? What's Esav's reaction? He cries. And he comes to his father and he says, Habracha achos, father, do you have even one bracha for me? Do you have anything for me? Do you have any? Tell me, if Esav is such a rasha, why does he care about the brachas? Wealth? He was already wealthy. Right? He was fine. Baruch Hashem, he did well for himself. He did well for himself. What does he need the bracha for? Because an Esav appreciated what his father was and appreciated the power of a blessing from his father. Habracha achas, father, do you have even one more bracha? Success in parenting isn't always measured by if your child becomes the Gadol Hadar. Because if that's the case, most of us fail. Right? Successful parenting is helping your child become the best person they could become. Yitzchak Avinu is wildly successful with his Esav. Because the truth is, most other people would have just simply thrown in the towel and written off of that kid as difficult, contrarian, obstructionist, uninterested, or all the other labels that we love to give our kids. But Yitzchak says, I'm the well digger. There's water there. He's not going to be a Yaakov. He's not going to be a Yaakov. That's just the way that it is. We have two different kids, two different personalities, two different destinies. Our goal was not to make him a Yaakov. Our goal, at least, is to allow him to find his inner water. Our goal is to allow him to find his inner holiness. And they decide, again, to divide and conquer. I don't know if it's a good parenting model. I don't know. But it's worked for them. And Yitzchak Avinu is able to uncover the well. Because in that moment, we're often so focused. You know, everyone thinks, what was that? Like Tanya said before, what was Esav's reaction to Yaakov taking the brachos? He's going to kill Yaakov. Yeah, he wanted to kill his brother. The same way brothers want to kill each other when one brother takes something from another brother. This time it was just literally kill him. But that wasn't his first reaction. His first reaction was, father, is there anything left for me? Because if there are no brachos for me, that means I'm not an extension of you. If there are no brachos for me, that means I don't have a place in the family. If there are no brachos for me, then that means I don't matter. Father, you've always told me I matter. Please don't tell me that I no longer matter. Please make me feel like I still matter. Please give me one bracha. This is the greatness of this story. Yitzchak and Rivka teach us how to parent different children different ways. Families often have a Yaakov and families often have an Esav. Well, hopefully families don't actually have an Esav. But they have children who are difficult or children who present all types of challenges. And Yitzchak teaches us, instead of getting frustrated, try to uncover the well. There might be layers upon layers of dirt. The job of a parent is to get out the shovel and to start digging. I like to believe that Yitzchak Avinu had some level of nachas from his Esav. Not the same nachas that he had from Yaakov, that's for sure. But a nachas nevertheless. Because at the end of the day, not only did he believe that Esav had those waters, but he knew that he spent his lifetime as a parent, removing the dirt, accessing the waters, and most importantly, he knew that Esav knew those waters were present as well. When Esav wants that bracha, that's his acknowledgement that I'm not just dirt. I found my water also. We should be zoche mirtz Hashem. As parents, to be able to employ these strategies of Yitzchak and Rivka, and to parent our children in the way that each of them individually needs. But on a global level, forget about parenting for just a moment. What we learn from Yitzchak Avinu is the need to find something good in every single person. Every person has a well. Every person has beautiful spiritual water coursing through their veins. Just sometimes it's obscured by layers and layers of dirt. You know, the Mishnah Pirkei Avos says, with this I'll conclude, Heve mi talmidim shel Aaron, be of the disciples of Aaron. Oiv shalom, you have to love peace. Rodev shalom, run after peace. Oiv es habrios, love people. Umekavron laTorah, bring them closer to Torah. So the Baal HaTanya says, why does it say oiv es habrios, love people? Brios literally means what? Creations. It's actually the most like, it's the lowest term to describe man, right? Anashim is a higher, brios. So the Baal HaTanya says something amazing. He says, you know what the godless of Aaron HaKohen was? It was the greatness of Yitzchak Avinu. It was the ability to see beneath the dirt and to see the beautiful spiritual waters in every single person. The goal in life is to try to find something good in every person. Baal Tanya says, some people, you'll look at them and you say, you know what? The only redeeming quality I could find in you is that you walk on two legs and not four. You're a Prius. You're not a cow. Shkoyach, you're not a cow. But you know what? It's a start. It's a start. Because if we condition ourselves to try to look for the good in people, even in difficult people, even in people, again, who don't present with any kind of goodness, if we follow the ways of Yitzchak and recognize that there's holiness trapped in every person, that there's a well obscured by many layers of dirt, if we condition ourselves to look that way, not just at our children, but at people in general, the world becomes a better place. Our lives become enriched. And we become just a little bit closer to being like Yitzchak Avinu and Rivka Imenu. Stop over here.